ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
It is an honor for me to be here. I really like the Bay Area in general. I grew up here in Lafayette. Then when I was 16, I became a monk and started a journey that took me around the world, many places. And I lived as a monk for 13 years. I married my wife, Nero Kula, who was also practicing spiritual life, sort of along parallel lines, although we'd never met. We met in our own spiritual community, and then we've been practicing together for over 30 years and have our home base in Burlingame, conveniently by the airport, because we do travel a lot. Maybe about 50 or 60% of the time we're off and going. And it's always our pleasure to be back in the Bay Area. It just feels like home. And of course, in the Ayurveda, which many of you are probably familiar with, it always says the best place to heal is at home, where you feel naturally among your own people and environment. So I feel very much at home here in California, what to speak of Marin. And even though I haven't met most of you, I recognize all of you in a way, because you're my kind of people. And I'm really happy to be here, and I thank Janaki, and I thank you for having this space here for consciousness. Oh, thanking you. Okay. My thanks are effusive. They go whoever they hit. Thank you very much for keeping this space open for all of us. And today we brought our band along with us. Part of our time together today, we'll spend doing some spiritual chanting, because the universal language we find is rhythm. And anywhere you go, if there's good rhythm, people will stop. Even animals will stop. And when there's a rhythm, and then you have melody, then the heart really opens. And if you have rhythm and melody and mantra, and mantra is a great science to be studied, but the word man means mind. And of course, those of you who have studied the Yoga Sutras and other wisdom literatures know that the first goal of yoga is to control the mind, because the mind is running a movie constantly, and it's very difficult to appreciate life or have any peace if we're simply watching the movie, the externalized features of the world, which get projected onto the mirror of the mind. But through the process of mantra, tra comes from the word trayate, which means to deliver. The mind can be easily delivered through the process of mantra. And over 500 years ago, a wandering monk named Chaitanya went throughout India, village to village, barefoot. He walked everywhere. And he taught people a secret that was there within the ancient Vedas for many thousands of years. And that was that wherever you are, doesn't matter if you live in a home or an apartment, an ashram, if you take up the practice of spiritual sound through the mantra, then you can transform not only your environment, but your mind, and you can touch the divine through the practice of mantra. This is the claim in the Vedas, the ancient Upanishads. In fact, the Kali Santaran Upanishad gives a very specific prescription for mantra. So if you're all up for it, we'll try a little mantra later on, singing together. And to begin with, I have a few little stories I want to tell you that hopefully will give some framework for the idea of behind the theme today, and that is, what is the theme, by the way? The matchless gift of a spiritual life. Yes. Tushta, welcome. I'm very surprised to see you. He runs a spiritual community in Denver, Colorado, and I had no idea he would be here today. Or did I? And I forgot. Good to see you. Anyway, welcome. So, the matchless gift. First of all, thinking about gifts, we may receive gifts here and there in the world. people oftentimes offer a free gift. And many times there are strings attached. We may receive the gift and then think, oh, they wanted something in return. And doesn't that sometimes diminish the power of the gift itself? In other words, we think about it later and they go, oh, he wanted something in return. He gave a gift, but it was tit for tat. However, if someone gives a gift and there is no expectation of return, it's given out of love, it's one of the most powerful forces, rephrase, it's the most powerful force in this world, in this universe, is the power of gratitude and love. And when a gift is given without any expectation of return, practically speaking, one may be at a loss how to reciprocate. How do you give back when someone gives you something out of love with no expectation in return? So gift giving is something actually we all know is very powerful. During holiday season, it comes up a lot. Is it better to give or receive? I read a study and when I was researching for a book that I wrote about interviews that were done through tens of thousands of people asking, better to give or receive? And what do you think everyone said? Yeah, better to give. And receiving sometimes isn't so easy. There may be extenuating circumstances under which I receive, but the process of giving and receiving is what one of the great teachers in the process of bhakti yoga says is the mainstay of the process of bhakti. And so the matchless gift of a spiritual life, there's a story that was told by Chaitanya, who I mentioned, the monk who wandered through India from town to town, village to village, teaching people how to start a spiritual practice very simply in their own home through the practice of what we call kirtan, or this singing with rhythm and saying the mantra again and again. And he told one of his main students, named Sanatan Goswami, the story of the poor man and the astrologer. So he said, the poor man had no means in life, he had no prospect, and he was very morose and wondering, what is my lot in life that I have nothing? And then one day he met an all-knowing astrologer. And this astrologer was so powerful that he could look into anyone's chart and then understand where they were in life and what would become of them. And so the astrologer looked into this man's life and his birth and his planets, and he said, well, actually, you're not a poor man. You are actually a very wealthy person, because although you were estranged from your father, he left you his entire fortune. And I can tell from your astrological chart where it is. Actually, it's in the yard where you're staying. It's right behind you. And I can tell you also how to dig it up. So then Chaitanya asked the question, how long does it take a poor man who finds out that now he's become wealthy to change his mood in life? Approximately how long do you think? What would you say?
I said immediately.
Immediately, right. So the perspective changes. If someone tells you suddenly that you have an inheritance coming of $1 billion, even if you're broke right now and your car just broke down, you wouldn't practically even care anymore. You just think, okay, I'm wealthy. It's a state of mind, really. And so Chaitanya is told that there's this treasure all of us have, but we've forgotten. And that's the greatest gift. The greatest gift, actually, he says, is to remind ourselves and remind others that the treasure is there. And there's also a map. Not that we're informed that the treasure is available, but then how do I get it? But there are meticulous instructions in the wisdom literatures, the yogic literatures, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought forth, called the Vedas. It's a large body of knowledge, which informs us of the path to which we can find this greatest treasure. And there are very specific tenets through which one can discover the treasure. So he goes into detail in telling the story to the poor man, how to dig for it. It's a certain process. And so there are various wisdom literatures that are compared to these treasure maps to find the real treasure. And in them, there's three principles through which all human progress, on which all human progress is based. Could you all say the three? Yeah, these three things. So these are known in Sanskrit to, as sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. It's called knowledge of where you are now. If you go to the mall, not that anybody goes to malls anymore, but if you did, and you were at a mall and you looked at the signboard that tells how to get around, it's a map, and someone had taken that little red dot off there that says you are here, it would be quite frustrating, wouldn't it? You're looking at a map and you think, like, what does it mean to me? But when it shows you, here you are, then you recognize, this is where I am. And knowing that, where am I now? And then understanding what the process is, what is the practice, and to reach the goal, called the prayojan. This gives a great impetus, because then I know there's a spring in my step. I know... that there's a specific process to follow and there's a goal that I'm looking for. So, one of the teachings in the Vedas is be careful what your goals are and what you're asking for. And the admonition is there, don't take gifts that you cannot enjoy peacefully. There's a lot of things that we can ask for here, but can I accommodate them? Can I take them on peacefully? And Chaitanya brings out from the wisdom teachings that the gift, the great treasure that we're looking for, it's already with us. It's within us. It's that close. Just as in the analogy with the poor man and the astrologer. The astrologer tells the poor man, treasure's right behind you. It's in your backyard all the time. You just have to find it and dig it up. According to the Vedas, as I'll refer to be succinct, these are the wisdom literatures. It's a large body of knowledge, and there are different departments. But very specifically, it narrows down to what's called the fruit of the Vedas, which gives very specific knowledge that's applicable to us right now, and through which one can very quickly move forward on a spiritual path. And these wisdom literatures from the Vedas point out that the human life is very special because it's a juncture. And it comes after a long time. There's a verse in Sanskrit which says, labvam sudulabam bidam bahusam bhavante, which means that you can't purchase a human body. It's not you can put an order in for it and say, I'd like one human body, please. It's something that's awarded by the power of material nature. And when you get it, there's a great opportunity. And that opportunity is that one can, and this is a very simple but profound concept, one can inquire. What can one do?
Inquire.
And the inquiry will bear fruit. According to the Vedas, there are thousands of species of life. And that the conscious entity called the Atma is transmigrating from one form to another. But when one comes to the human body, there's a portal through which one can inquire about higher knowledge. And one of the great questions that one can ask, that often people don't ask, is this all there is? There's a boy saint in the Vedas, his name is Prahlad, and he asked the question, kutra, which means where is it? Kutra shisha shuti sukham mrigachushni rupa, he says. And that is that Kutra, where's that happiness everyone's talking about? He says, Ashisham, I'm being promised that I'm going to get some kind of benediction, some reward, some gift in this world. But then he says, Shuti Sukham. Shuti means to hear, and Sukham means happiness. So it says, it's happiness I hear about, but I never actually get it. You go to somebody's house, They invite you for dinner, and you sit in the living room, and you hear pots moving in the kitchen, and they never bring you the dinner. There's a promise that it's coming, but it never does. So the Vedas say very loudly that we have one primary purpose in the human life, and it's to inquire, and inquire vigorously about where's that happiness, where is it, and that the answers will be forthcoming for those who ask. Of course, we can look at our environment. I took a picture of this sign in the San Francisco airport. And can anybody see what it says under Ghirardelli chocolate? Timeless pleasure. A moment of timeless pleasure. Doesn't that sound nice? Timeless pleasure? It does. It's very inviting. And if only we could get it in a Ghirardelli chocolate bar. And how about this one? Coca-Cola. What does that say?
Open happiness.
Open happiness. Have you tried it? Does the happiness come out? You're sitting waiting. It's like, are you in there? But this is a pervasive idea. And look it. We can go all around the world. We travel a lot. We go to many, many countries around the world. And we've noticed this phenomenon. Now, here we are. We see this sign that says, find your happy place. Travel. Okay, so we start traveling. We go to Vietnam. And when we're in Vietnam, then we see another sign that says, Scotland awakes in India. And then once we get to India, it says, it's better in the Bahamas. We get to the Bahamas, and it says, go to Los Angeles. That's the place to go. We get to Los Angeles, and then Arizona calls us and says, you got to be here. There's this sense, wherever I go in this world, that there's some other place to be, something else to become. And this is the analogy of the musk deer, the legend of the musk deer, that the musk deer emits a beautiful scent. It comes from its own navel. And it goes uphill and down dale, looking for that scent, trying to find where is it coming from? Going in caves, sniffing the water, going to various trees and bushes and says, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it. But someone might inform the musk deer that it comes from your own navel. This is your essence. This is who you are. This is natural for you, this great scent. This may be a little hard to make out, so let me describe it for you. You can see on the right-hand margin, it says M&M, M plus M, forever. Does that kind of nomenclature mean anything to any of you? What does it mean to you? M plus M, what do you think that means? True love together forever. Have you ever seen such a thing written anywhere?
Yeah.
Carved in benches, perhaps, in trees? This one is from my neighborhood, and what it is somebody used a permanent marker on the pavement, and they made a big heart, and inside it says M&M, M plus M, and then forever. And when I saw that, I took a picture, and I was thinking about that. What was the emotion of the person who wrote it down? And what was their expectation? And did they find this forever love that they were looking for? Did they ever even meet? Or was it a secret admiration? Nonetheless, as you see here, a picture of a coin that is lying in the desert. It's a gold coin, very ornate gold coin in the desert. And if you happen to be wandering in the desert and you find this gold coin, you might say, where did this come from? This is a very strange place for a coin to show up in the middle of the desert. And it seems out of place, doesn't it? So at the top, we have HEA. Does anybody know what that stands for? Happily ever after. Everyone say it.
Happily ever after.
Does that remind you of your childhood? Did a parent or someone read to you a story, and at the end they said, and they lived happily ever after. Familiar? And did you ever think about it when you walked away? It's like, how do they do that? How do they get that happily ever after? I mean, after all, it seems that the world's transitory and things are moving on all the time. But nonetheless, that feeling, that emotion is there. Everyone has it. Everyone wants to live happily ever after. And is it an aberration? The Vedas say, no, it's not. It's your nature. It's your nature to inquire about that and find out. Don't accept the transitory world as your home. This is my friend, the spider. I garden. And one day, when I finish digging, I put my shovel on the side of my gardening shed. And I came back the next day, and the spider had built a web. He connected from the handle of the shovel to the shed. And I had to have a little talk with him. I said, my dear spider, this is not an ideal place for a web. It's going to be moved. And throughout the Vedas, we find the we're given perspective that the world we live in is transitory. Don't think that you can invest here or stay here forever. It's moving on. It's not meant to be your permanent home. And I felt a kindred soul to this spider. Because then I looked at my own house. I thought, here, my house here. I think this is my hearth and home forever. Happily ever after, I'll live here. And it's perfectly stable. And anybody who lives in California or knows about California knows that that's not true. Because at any second, it can topple. And just by the force of time, things come and go. So the Vedas, in the context of developing a spiritual life and practice, go into the analyzation of the difference between consciousness and possessions. And here's a palace for anyone who would like to live in a palace. And we would like to offer someone a palace today. Anybody like to? You're all yogis, so you're very detached and you don't need anything. But just to go along with it, anybody would like to take the palace from me today? Just to play along?
Please.
Okay. We're going to give you a palace. There's just a few stipulations. You can have anything you want in the palace. Let's name some highly opulent material things that he might keep in his palace. What do you want to give him?
Silks.
You get lots of silks. You have piles of diamonds. Watches? What kind of watches? Rolex watches, okay. Any cars?
Tesla.
A Mazda? Give him a Maserati, a Tesla. Give him 50 Teslas. That's just the entryway to the palace. I mean, the garage can take in about 500 Teslas. So you give 500 Teslas. You have refrigerator trucks coming up all day long with organic vegan food for you. And on and on and on. Only one stipulation, no living entities there. We won't allow any living thing. No plants, no pets, no people. You're there by yourself. How does he feel now? How do you feel now? A little lonely. But if one day, with all this, all these material possessions, a green parrot flies in and lands on his shoulder, he'll become his best friend. Why? Because there's a conscious entity within that bird. And he can reciprocate. Consciousness is higher than matter. It's categorically different from matter. And we know that intuitively. When there's a disaster, what do we go for first? Here's a flood coming up. And we go in, and what do we go for first? We save the Maserati. We save the... I need my Rolex watch, right? At those times, we naturally distinguish between the higher energy and the lower energy, which is talked about in detail and very scientifically within books like the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita gives a catalog of lower and higher energy. For instance, Gita says, 7th chapter, Bhumir apu analovayu kammano bhudirevacha ahankara ityame binna prakriti rashtada. Earth, water, fire, air. Now the subtle elements, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. These are described as the gross and subtle separated energies. And then the teacher goes on to say, aparayam itastanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat, which means that above these is a higher energy, which is called the energy of the atma, the self, the conscious entity, which is considered to be the most amazing phenomena of this world. And we gravitate towards that wherever we go. especially in times of emergency. We see this. Now, there are many cars in the Bay Area. And we know this because we just drove over here. And we saw a lot of them. And most of them were in front of us. And any of you have a car? So there's a difference between a car and your car. What is the difference? Well, the practical difference is that, say, we're sitting here. What is your name? Philip. We're sitting here, and let's just say Philip looks very serene and detached. And so, and I don't even know if you have a car here, but let's just say, for the sake of this experiment that you did, and your car was parked right outside that window. And then we suddenly heard another car careening around the corner and a smashing noise. And Philip triangulates and he thinks, that's about where I parked my car. Now, Philip goes from serene to what?
Agitated.
Yeah, what are some of the symptoms? Specific. Yeah, perspiration, that comes up. Heartbeat goes up. Anything else? Muscle tension. How about the mind? Start spinning like a ceiling fan. I didn't pay my insurance. Did I pay my insurance? And then he goes to the window. And he looks out the window and he sees it wasn't his car, it was Cogent's car. Now, how does Philip feel? How does Cogent feel? Same symptoms. They're transferred immediately. How are they transferred immediately? It's just a car. It's all the same thing. There's a car, but now, because it's my car, because I've invested my consciousness into the car, that's why it matters. It's not that independently it matters. Matter doesn't matter until we invest ourselves into it. And so we are asked by the great wisdom literatures to measure things and see what's important, even those who are motivational speakers and who teach about self-help say that we should prioritize what's the most important thing. Don't major in minor things. Find out what's the most important thing and then put all our energy there. That makes sense. So if we look at a pan scale and we put one Atma, we put the spiritual self of Philip on one side, and then we put on the other side all the things in Marin County. And how many things are there in Marin County? Approximately how many? 2 million and? 2,099,000, approximately. There are that many things here. What are some of the things we're going to put over there? Some of the things we took from Cogent's house after he split because he went off with the parrot somewhere. So we take all those things that we already stacked up, we won't go through it again, and we put them on that side. Which is heavier? Well, materially speaking, but actually that one Atma outweighs all the things in Marin, not just out the things in Marin, but everything in the United States. And if you expand out and take all the things in Europe, put it out, what's more important? The Atma, that self, that's beyond matter. And so we come to a conclusion in the Vedas of India that the most valuable thing that you have is you. If you look inside and find you don't have to become something, you already are something that's so magnificent that if you look at it, you'll see that you have the greatest treasure. It's already there. You are that treasure. And we then are introduced to this concept of Om. And if we could take a second to say Om. Om. And according to one of the teachers that I met many years ago in India, who was a great scholar and poet, the Om is the big yes. It's saying, yes, you can. Yes, everything that you can imagine is possible. That beyond the fetters of matter, beyond my connection to the limiting beliefs that I am material, that I am faced with non-existence. Actually, when one understands one's Atma, one's self, that I'm beyond matter, then the world takes a different look. It's everything becomes possible. All the human impetus that I want to fly in the sky or go to the deepest part of the ocean, this is natural that we want to go to the greatest heights, but we're limited by our environment and by our connection to the material mind. So Om says, open up to the highest conception of life. And then, as we mentioned, the practice. The first was, in the three tenets that I mentioned in the beginning, what was the first? Knowledge. So we just discussed just a basic framework of knowledge, of identifying where I am and what I am. And is once I have identified that, then comes the practice. And this is a practice of cultivating the heart. Sometimes it's compared to a garden or an agricultural field. And in order to prepare the garden, agricultural field, there are certain things necessary to prepare oneself. First of all, one has to till the ground, and one has to trust good seeds. Know your source. And if you have good seeds and you plant them there within your heart, as a metaphor for the spiritual practice, then and you have some patience, they will grow fruit. Everything grows fruit. Everything that we do, everything that we take in, eventually has some result. This is widely known, and it's referred to in many ways, but everyone knows that karma means when you plant something, you're going to get the result. And don't act all surprised that later on, when the result comes, that like, I had no idea. Well, maybe you didn't, but you should be more careful, say the wisdom literatures. You should be aware, deliberate on these things. Part of deliberation means understanding what are the consequences of my actions, and be more deliberate. Deliberate to become deliberate. This is a plant in my backyard that I put in about 6 years ago, and every year I came out to see it, and I was wondering, where are the flowers? What is the name of this plant? Yeah, it's a lilac. I'd seen lilacs in West Virginia, and I said, I have to have lilacs. I mean, after all, anything will grow in Burlingame practically. So I put in a lilac plant, and I kept visiting it and say, you know, take your time. And after 3 years, I said, take your time, but hurry up. And then after 6 years, just this year, that spring is coming, as we all know, and the flowers are coming out. And I had this profound, although it's a very simple concept, realization that whatever you plant will eventually provide the fruit. And so in trusting seeds, knowing which seeds you're getting from which source, and then planting them and having patience and cultivating the soil, protecting the plant, then the fruit will come. The fruit will come. And one of the primary practices for a spiritual life is described in the wisdom literatures on bhakti as shruti. Could everyone please say shruti? Shruti means what you hear. Means hearing. And these literatures give very special significance to the hearing process and our capacity to hear, our capability of hearing. And by hearing, one can triangulate and find one's path, what is called home, to one's spiritual home. And why then do I have a fish on the screen? Any idea?
Salmon.
It's a salmon. Very good. You know where I'm going, don't you? So in Muir Woods, which you can't get in today without a reservation, we saw twice, there is a stream. And one day when I was walking through Muir Woods, I met the ranger, and I asked the ranger, what are you doing? Because he had gaiters up to here, and he had long pair of tongs, and he was pulling little pieces of something out of the stream. And he said, I'm taking micro trash out of this beautiful stream. And he said, it disturbs the fish. I said, how so? And he said, because their sense of smell is so acute that when various kinds of trash, including coins, and we saw when we were up in Mendocino at the Botanical Gardens, there's a little sign on the bridge over the stream that says, coins not needed to operate stream. People somehow have an idea that if I throw a coin in the water, something magical will happen in my life. Well, something happens with the fish, too. The coins actually disturb their sense of smell. And the ranger went on to tell us that these quijo salmon, which are an integral part of our environment here in California, live in the stream for some time. Their bodies start to change in the fresh water, and they prepare themselves to swim down to the ocean. And they go into the Great Salt Ocean and sometimes migrate for 2,000 miles and sometimes stay out for 3 years. And then they turn around and they come back to the exact same stream they came down from. And what do they do then? No, they swim up the stream again. They go all the way up, and you can see this. There are actually fish ladders people put some places in Alaska and Canada where the fish makes it easier for them to get up. But these fish struggle their way back upstream, and where do they go? To the exact same place where they were born. And there they spawn, and afterwards they die. And when I heard this, I found a parallel to the teachings of the Vedas, which gives the very essence of the process of bhakti yoga. And the bhakti yoga wisdom scriptures say that by the process of hearing spiritual sound, that one can find one's way back to one's original home. This traveling from one place to another aimlessly. In fact, the word travel comes from the word travail. Where does travail come from? It's an instrument of torture. Tree veil. It's a kind of whip that has three little balls on the end. I won't go into details what it does. But it's not nice. And the idea of being forced to move on aimlessly from one place to the next, practically loitering in a world where I cannot stay, is a kind of torture for the Atma, which needs a permanent home. This is the idea behind finding the goal. Home is where the heart is, as they say. So the fish finds its way home through smelling. And the Vedas say that we find ourselves our way home through the process of? That's it. That's how simple the process of bhakti is and how it's presented. The beginning, the middle, and the end, and all the points in between are achieved by directing one's hearing process. These two little, if you look at them in the mirror when you go home, just look for a little while and you go, that's freaky. These things look like little satellite dishes. And they're designed just to catch sound. And the sound is very consequential. Therefore, have you seen these? Yeah, they're all over the Bay Area. Because whatever you dump in the suburbs and it goes into the storm drain will end up in the San Francisco Bay. And similarly, as I was walking past one day and I was doing my walking meditation, I saw that and I thought of how my ears resemble these storm drains and that I should have little placards here. I've often threatened to have tattoos up here that say, I won't do it, but no dumping, drains to the bay of the heart. Whatever goes in here ends up here. And according, in a poetical way, to the bhakti scriptures, the heart is the driver of our body. Why do I go certain directions? Sometimes I don't even know. I'm walking a certain direction. I'm saying, don't go that direction, my intelligence is saying, but my heart is going, no, that's okay. That's the way I'm going. Because that's the state of my heart. Due to what I've put in here, it's gone in here, and I'm directed in that way. Therefore, being careful about not dumping just anything here is one of the disciplines of bhakti. If I put in a nourishing spiritual sound, it enriches the heart and it clarifies. It gives me intelligence to make decisions which are beneficial for my path. And it also leads to other benefits. One of them is called santosh. Everyone say please. Santosh means satisfaction, but a friend of mine has given this very easy to understand concept of of satisfaction as in one word, which is enough. Everyone say
enough.
Yeah. Do you, if I have this sense that I have enough right now, whatever I have, that's enough. Just being who I am is enough. You become the wealthiest person alive, knowing that you have enough. Material sound, you can take in the 24-hour news cycle. And after a month, how will you feel? Otherwise, you can take in spiritual sound. You can change your diet, so to speak, of what you ingest through your ears, and you'll notice the difference yourself. You have to. And you have to see it for yourself. And it's compared in the Bhakti scriptures to eating. When you're hungry and you eat, how do you feel? You get nourished, you feel satisfaction, and your hunger goes away. You know for yourself, and nobody has to give you a certificate. So in a similar way, when you hear spiritual sound, you'll also feel a sense of perspective of the world that you didn't have before. And you feel a direct connection to home, to your original divine source. Now, to the practical aspect of chanting, which we'll do in just a couple minutes if you're all still up for it. Yes? Okay. This was a real experience for me several years ago when a Malaysian airline flight was lost. I don't know why it affected me so much, but it really did. I heard about this, and I was I felt empathy for the people on that flight. What's it like to be lost and nobody knows where you are? And then the reports came in and explained why that happened. There's a little black box inside every jetliner. And therein there's a transponder. That transponder puts out a signal that can be picked up by the tower at the airport. And if a jet goes off course, they can see, oh, here's where it is. If it happens to land on water, they can see, oh, it went down here. But if the transponder goes off, which is what apparently happened in the Malaysian Airlines, if somebody turned it off, it broke, who knows? We don't know. But it was silent. And to this day, no one found the Malaysian airline jet. So when I heard about that, when I was doing my mantra meditation in my garden early one morning, and it just came into my mind about the Malaysian airline, I started, as I said, feeling empathy. And how did I experience that? I thought, I'm just like the passengers on that flight. Who knows where I am? I'm lost, practically, marooned, shipwrecked in this world. And how will I put out a signal? And as I was chanting my mantra, I was thinking, this is my transponder. I'm putting this signal out that here I am. Please come and pick me up from this place. This is the idea behind the mantra, that I'm putting out this spiritual vibration. I'm taking it in myself, but I'm also putting it out as a heartfelt prayer, if you will, that please lift me up, bring me to a higher level. They heard us. You just talk about it, and I didn't plan that. Well, there it is. If you pray hard enough. Hello? And so the mantra is the sound vibration that we can both emit ourselves and listen to. And it has a double effect. It goes into the ear, into the heart, and purifies, and it also puts out a signal that here's where I am in this world. And so this is a mantra that comes from the Kali Santarana Upanishad. It has three words. The first is Hare. Try.
Hare.
This means, it's actually the feminine aspect of the Supreme, and it means, comes from the word Hara. But in the vocative form, when you're saying it as a prayer, it means you say Hare. And it also means one who takes away all the burdens of material life. You know all that stuff you have that you don't know what to do with? And where do you put it all? Extra storage locker or whatever. And so we have in our hearts many burdensome ideas, concepts, and so forth, habits. And Hari or Hare is the one who takes those away. The next word, Krishna, try.
Krishna.
A very beautiful word which means the attractor. That which we find beautiful, the aesthetics of this world that pull our mind in a certain direction. We're naturally attracted. The word Krishna means actually the source of all attraction, for the source of all aesthetic beauty that draws my mind naturally. I don't even have to think about it. If a beautiful person walks by, my eyes just go there. I don't calculate. It just happens. So Krishna is the source of all that beauty. And say Rama.
Rama
means a spiritual power. In order to overcome a habit, a bad habit, let's say, you need the wherewithal to do that. You need a little bit of strength, right? This is called yoga balena, the strength of yoga. And this is embodied in the word Rama. You get spiritual strength from Rama when you say Rama. Try it again.
Rama.
Yeah, according to the theory of mantra, the power is in the mantra itself. It's in the words itself. And especially when it's transmitted in the proper spirit and mood, then one can feel it from oneself directly. So this is the mantra, which I'll leave up here. And we brought our musicians with us. We brought them all the way over from Santa Clara County. So we can, let's welcome our musicians. You can give them a hand. Here you go. Priya, give me some kartals, would you please? So this mantra in this process is just called Sankirtan. Everyone can say? San means together, and kirtan means to sing or chant. So this is a spiritual practice that's been done for thousands of years, and which now, of course, has become popular here in the West. And so it's a call and repeat. So I'll sing out the mantra, and then you can repeat it back. And don't try to interpret it or think too deeply about it. Just try to take it in through your ears and let it enter your heart. And the mantra has its own power and its own magic. And so you don't have to intellectualize the process. You have kartal? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Seconds of silence. one spot. Take a bath every day for our bodies. Chaitanya taught that there's a way to take a bath for yourself. So it gets mango sap. When you get mango sap in your hair, you can't get it out unless you have solvent. And this sound vibration, according to the Vedas, is the solvent that removes all the unwanted attachments, concerns, desires that are there within the heart. And one who practices this on a regular basis will feel cleansed and purified and happy and informed, because naturally true knowledge, wisdom flows into the heart that's clean and open. And now, I'm checking on the time. It's 5:10, we have to... Oh, boy, that's wonderful. I'd like to take a few reflections. And after we take a few reflections, we're going to do one more kirtan, just to end the session, because it's so fun. And reflections are those words, concepts, tenets that you heard that I gave in the monologue that's stuck in your mind. Anything that you found to be either interesting or even better, helpful, that you might take out of here in your pocket. And if somebody grabs you by the arm out there and says, what was that guy talking about in there? This is the one thing that you'll tell them. This is the one thing that I took out of here. So in this reflection process, it augments whatever information that I spoke and brings it out so that we can hear what went in. And it's practically an amazing feature also, that because we're all conscious entities, when we speak something, that it goes in. Where did it go? You have it now. Let's hear what you've got. Yes?
Protecting our satellite dishes from harmful sounds and only loving and spiritual sounds, which is so important for me right now. Mm. I need to hear that, Jill. You know that. So I'll take that away. And I'll take that along.
Powerful, yes. I mentioned doing tattoos, but somebody said they're already making earrings with those. That might be a little less intrusive. What else did you hear? Yes.
Knowing the source of your seeds.
Yes. I mean, there's a miracle in seeds, but there is a scientific part too. There's a part that we do. We can't make seeds. Nobody can. And we can't make them grow, but we can make a proper environment for them. And when we search out the seeds, we can do our due diligence and see, where did they come from? Is this a trusted source for the seeds? Has it been proven before that these kinds of seeds grow, and so forth? And once we have that kind of trust and we plant them, then
it's altogether possible. Because, you know, okay, we keep going back. They didn't come up yet, but I know. The guy told me, and I know them, and there's references, and it's tried and true. Thank you. Very nice point. What else? What did you hear? Yes?
I love your analogy of sending signals to the universe out here. I thought that giving that connection with the universe, even if you cannot see.
Yes. Thank you for remembering that. It was a very meaningful experience for me. And turn your transponder on. Keep it on. Don't fly without the information about where you are, so someone can come and get you and come and pick you up, right? Yes, thank you very much. What else? Yes?
The washers are seen from the ears, then it goes into the heart.
Yes. Yes, and the Vedas say, Anyarevahu sambhavad, anyarahura sambhavad. Iti shushumadhiranam, yinas tadvijachakshire. It said, there's one result from hearing spiritual sound, and you'll get a completely different result from hearing material sounds. So discriminate and deliberate, and then be deliberate about what kind of sound you allow to go in. The human body is a highly tuned instrument, according to the Vedas. It's meant for a specific purpose, which is to inquire on a much higher level, to think about what's the greatest, what is Brahman, what is the highest thing that one can conceive of. All the other problems of life are naturally solved. The Vedas say, if you go and look at the animals, like I have one guru who lives in my yard. He's a squirrel. And that squirrel teaches me so many lessons. Every every fall when I come back to see him, because I'm in India, during most of the fall season, I come back and I say, where'd you get the coat? And he goes, I don't know, just got it. And he's like, what have you been doing? Just eating stuff off the trees. And he eats the persimmon and hangs over the fence for half an hour with his belly hanging out. It's like, how'd you find it? It's orange, you know, I just know. And so there's natural ways in which the basic questions of life are answered. But the human can actually ask the very high questions. And by doing that, we employ the real purpose of the human apparatus. Thank you very much. What else? Yes?
It sounds like we have an obligation to inquire.
Yes, and the Srimad Bhagavatam says, inquire we will. Everyone's inquiring about something. It's just the quality of the inquiry. And so it's just saying, you're already inquiring about so many things. That won't stop. It's the human condition to inquire. It's the living condition to inquire. However, refine the inquiry. Ask for something higher. And it will come. It's forthcoming when you ask. Thank you. What else? Yeah.
We don't need to travel the world to find our treasure. It's right in our backyard.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to go somewhere. Obviously, I'm not anti-travel, but you don't have to go anywhere, and you don't have to become something. You already are something. You have to discover what you are. There's a process to do that, but it's not becoming something else. It's discovering what's already there, uncovering. This is what Chaitanya taught, to look and see. Polish off the jewel that you are and see what you are. You'll be fascinated by it. It's more fascinating than all the other things in the world. There isn't anything, the Bhagavad Gita says, more fascinating than the self. After all, take a look at somebody right now if you dare. And when you look at somebody, you're looking in their eyes, right? It's a little scary. I mean, if I'm driving down the 101 freeway and I'm next to somebody parallel and I look at them, they'll go, what? You know? How did I do that? What did I just do? I transmitted consciousness. It touched somebody. How did I touch somebody? They're driving at 75 miles an hour, so am I. And we look through window. How did it go through glass? How did that person turn and say, what, who, when, me, what? We have power. We're putting out this powerful energy. It's called consciousness, and that's what animates the world. And it's the refinement of consciousness and the investigation of consciousness that is the frontier, the new frontier, for all those who are entering into the great gift of spiritual life. What else? What did you hear? Yes?
That love is the answer.
Yes, it's the most powerful force in the universe. It's, if you give a gift with unmotivated heart, just out of love, practically speaking, the person will feel an overwhelming power. And they may spend the rest of their life thinking how to reciprocate in kind. Because practically, it's so valuable to give something without asking anything in return. That I don't want anything. Just I'm overflowing, so I'm giving you out of gratitude, out of love. That person then also becomes infused with that feeling, with that energy. And it's the most powerful energy in the universe, love. Thank you. What else? What one thing did you hear? Concept. Yes?
Concept of cultivating your heart. Yes.
Yeah, so when you heard that, what did you think about it? What's the imagery that came into your mind, and why did you like it?
Well, I guess literally fresh tilled soil, but initially how quickly I skip that step. Oh, I don't have the patience, which so appropriately followed up with a reminder on patience. funny how that happens. But the new earth, I suppose, also, and the new opportunity lies there.
The great miracle of the soil and the seed and the rain and the sunshine all put together. But gardeners know if you just leave it to its own devices, when you come back, you'll find all kinds of things going on, all kinds of mischief. I mean, it just comes in from every direction, and that's always, according to the Bhagavad Gita, the way this world is. Therefore, you have to be vigilant. If you want to have an ordered garden, if you want fruit, you have to be careful. I have snails, I used to have snails, but they come into my yard, and I have to go out a certain time of night, and I collect them up, and I put them in a box, and I take them to the park. And they say, now you have an all-you-can-eat buffet. Just please not here right now. And I've seen so many alien invaders come in to the tomatoes. And it's like, where did you guys come from? These bugs. And it's like, are you from here? It's like, we're not from here. We just fly around and find tomatoes. So without cultivation, which includes a little vigilance about, you know, what I'm letting in and how I'm letting it in, it's very important for the practice of spiritual life. Thank you. Take two more. Yes. Santosh, contentment, which my good friend and colleague says in one word means enough. If you can feel in yourself that I have enough, I'm satisfied. This is a symptom, according to the yoga scriptures, that you're on a spiritual platform. Because I am enough. What I am is a unit of consciousness, which is it's non-destructible. There's no warranty on it that I have to worry about. And when I'm aware of it, consciousness can become aware of itself. And when the conscious self becomes aware of itself through introspection, through looking within and discovering itself, it finds the greatest gift, the greatest wealth, the treasure that's there. And this is the real purpose of yoga and the human experience. One more. Yes?
The example of fish, I was thinking about like how I feel lost in this world. And it's not like once. So many occasions I feel lost and disconnected. And these are the moments when you were chanting. I was literally crying in my heart and I was feeling this moment should stop and we should just keep chanting.
Yes. And you can do that. You can arrange to have sessions where you chant for longer and you experience it for yourself. Just see what it does. Why not? And who can stop you? You know, organize a place, a safe place where you can chant and just experiment with your consciousness. Investigate what's the theory behind it. Is it sound? Is it well-reasoned? Is the science of mantra sound valid? If it does, try it and see how it affects you. And you can move in that direction. Use your free will to move in that direction. And that's just what we'll do now. Now, I have another element to add to this idea of kirtan, and that is dance. Dance is another universal expression that people appreciate everywhere. When somebody sees somebody moving gracefully, gestures are pretty much universally understood. Even if somebody doesn't speak the local language, if your house is burning down, by gestures you can get the point across to your neighbors, right? So a gesture is something that, and dance and movement is something also very universal that really comes from the heart. So one thing that I would suggest in this next kirtan, this next sankirtan that we'll do, we're going to bring it up a notch with a little bit livelier tune, a melody that you can maybe move your feet to. Would you like to try that? This is a raga. It's a different scale. Play that little scale. Sa re ga ma. Doesn't that get you? Do it again. Sa re ga ma pa ga ni sa. Does that transport you to somewhere exotic? Yes, it does. And so now with the power of music, which various chords, major chords are bright, they we're cheery, we want to march, minor chords, I become melancholy and I think about all my love lost. And then in these some of these ragas, then I think like, whoa, who am I? What are the mysteries of the universe? It's like charming a snake. The mind is unpredictable like a snake, but these mantras, the mind can become charmed. So we're going to sing a mantra now that you can move your feet to. So that means if you like, You can stand up and move. And I'll show you one of the dance moves that my spiritual teacher taught me. And that is, it's called the Swami. And so all you have to do for the Swami is say you're standing like this. You want to try it? Hey, go ahead and stand up. So to do the Swami, all you do is place one foot in front of the other like this, and then alternate back to this way. And make sure there's a clean path for you so you don't step on anything. You might want to, if there's a way to move a few things out of the way, otherwise you might feel inhibited. Okay. Let's try the Swami. You go right, then left. And now, you know, if you had car keys and money and a little piece of paper in your pocket that said you have to show up for jury duty and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden you put your hands in the air, and if you were dancing, it might all go flying out. And then it would be gone. So a similar way, I carry all kinds of cares and anxieties in the pocket of my heart and mind. And so when you put your hands in the air and you dance like this to the mantra, hey, just let it all fly out. Sean Penn once, he lived in Malibu, and the great fire came and it burned down his house. So he was on Cherry Gross, and she was asking him, so all your stuff's gone, how does it feel? He goes, well, you know all those things in your drawers you're wondering what to do with? Yeah, those bills you didn't pay and all that stuff. You said, I don't have that anymore. So let yourself go to the kirtan. And if you like, at intervals, whenever you feel like it, express yourself, put your hands in the air. And this is just one idea. You can dance in whatever way you like. Okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Oh,
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, hey, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.